This is Karen Musgrave, and I'm conducting a Cookers SOS Save Our Stories interview with Toria Cookie Washington. And Cookie is in Charleston, South Carolina, and I'm in Naperville, Illinois, so we're conducting this interview over the telephone. Today's date is January 26, 2009. It is now 9:15 in the morning. And Cookie, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to do this interview with me.
Oh, thank you for inviting me, Karen. I'm thrilled.
Me too. Tell me about your quilt, The Hope of a New Day Begun.
Wow. I don't even know where to start to talk about my quilt. When I got the call from Carolyn Meslimi to be invited into this quilt show, I literally almost fell over. I was so excited and so incredibly honored to be asked to make a quilt for the then president-elect. Carolyn Meslimi, when she called, she said, "Are you sitting down?" And I said, "Oh, I'm sitting down." And I actually wasn't. And then when she told me what she wanted, I did have to sit down. And I just immediately started crying. And she said she had been asked by Roland Freeman to help him select 44 master art quilters. And I said, "This is Cookie Washington. Are you sure you've called the right number?" And she said, "Oh, yes." Anyway, so she told me the requirements, and I said, "Okay, I think I can do this." And the last thing she said before she hung up the phone was, "Well, don't tell anybody." So, of course, as soon as I hung up the phone, I called my mother and told her. And I was so excited and so honored that I was crying, you know, just so overcome with emotion and joy. And my mother started freaking out, thinking that something was wrong with her grandchildren, my children. And I finally was able to choke out, "No, nothing is wrong with the babies," because she kept saying, "What's wrong with the babies? The babies are 26, 26, and 27, so they're not really babies anymore, but that's just how she thinks about them." And so I told her, and she was like, "Oh, my God, that's so wonderful." And then I realized, when I hung up the phone for my mother, I had 28 days to make a quilt. 28 days to make a quilt. And I said, "Okay, I'm going to do this." So I just set my little brain to work and drew and looked at pictures and looked at inspiration. And this is kind of dorky, but I did it, so I'll own it. I must have listened to his acceptance speech from the election night 30 times. Over the 4 or 5 days it took me to get the design. And I just kept thinking, this is a new day. This is a new day. This is a new day. You know, this is a new world. This is new hope. And I really wanted to believe, because he is biracial, that this would bring together Americans of all different races and hopefully faith, and we would launch a new day in America. And I'm crying again, thinking about it. And so I got the idea of the hands, and I was going to do hands planting a tree, but that was a little bit difficult to execute. I didn't like any of those. So then I got the idea of the hands with the new leaf. And I worked on that. And it was about 48 hours before I got my final design. I always go to the FedEx Kinko's to get my designs blown up. When I draw a sketch out a design, whatever size I sketched it at, that's just it. You know, if I make it on an 8x10 piece of paper, it's 8x10. So off to Kinko's I go.
Do you use the big copier?
And I use the big copier.
I love that copy machine.
Oh, my gosh. I love that copy machine. And I love my Kinko friends. They are so great. You know, I told the manager of the Kinko's, I said, if Kinko's ever goes out of business, my quilting career is absolutely over because I can't blow anything up by myself. So, yay Kinko's on Orleans Road in Charleston, South Carolina. Oh, dear, I'm not going to answer that. I'm sorry. So then over the next 4 or 5 days, I went to my stash. I probably have enough fabric to open a fabric store. And so I pulled as much fabric out. I really wanted to not be have to spend a lot of money to get this project done because we're not being paid for it. So I pulled a lot of fabric from my own stash, and then, of course, I still did have to go to the fabric store and buy some fabric. But it was a great deal of fun to pull stuff from my own stash and say, I think I remember what I bought this for, but now it's going to go to what I believe is a higher purpose. And it really challenged me and focused me to stay on task. I was so proud of myself because I only bought what I needed. I didn't go in and go, oh, my goodness, they have some other kind of fabric and buy 8 yards of that. I only bought what I needed. I was so really proud of myself for that. And the only thing that I couldn't find the perfect fabric for was the outside circle. So I went to the best fabric store in South Carolina, People, Places, and Quilts in Somerville. And they had the absolutely perfect, most beautiful, must have been woven just for me for this project fabric. But they only had 2 fat quarters of it. And for those people who don't know, a fat quarter is 22 inches wide by 18 inches long. And I had estimated that I needed 1 1/4 yards. So I was praying to the fabric fairies. But I did buy the 2 fat quarters and I went home. And I spent like 6 hours that night. I mean, literally, I was up at 3 o'clock in the morning searching online fabric stores looking for matching fabrics. I thought I found it. I ordered it. I was all happy. And when it came, of course, it was not the same fabric. It was way too light. And so I thought, I'll do a Scarlett O'Hara. I will think about it tomorrow when I can stand it better. So I just decided to go back to working on the inner circle design. And I, along the way, I did tell some friends that I was doing this project, even though I was still not supposed to. It was just the most fun process. I think I used, and I didn't, Karen, I apologize, I didn't count, but I think I used 15 different colors of fabric from tan to dark brown to get the hands done. I think it was about 15 fabrics. And then I put the had to deal with the outside circle, where the words full of the hope that the present has brought us was going to be appliqued on. And all I had was those 2 fat quarters, and I went through my stash again, looked for everything, didn't find anything that was exactly as right as that. So I just, again, at 2 o'clock in the morning, I decided I have to do this. I will make this work. Even if I've got to weave fabric, I didn't know what I was going to do, but I knew that was the only fabric in the world that was going to be able to fit this quilt. So my quilt is a circle. It's about 37 inches in diameter, and so I needed a piece that would be whatever is the circumference by 5 inches for the outside of the quilt. Well, I have never more believed in God than the night that I got all those pieces cut out to go, of fabric to go around the outside of that quilt. I had to patch it in 3 different places, but you absolutely cannot see it. This really was divinely inspired and helped along. So it happened. And it it got done. I mean, the magic happened, and it absolutely got in there, and it got done. So the hands were done, the leaf was done, the outside fabric was on the outer ring of the quilt. I was going to have and I do have a narrow black inner circle, but I wanted that done after the quilting was done. So I have my quilts professionally quilted when I can. There is a really lovely couple, Patricia and Leon Hopkins, who live in Somerville, South Carolina, who do a fantastic job of quilting. They're just fantastic. And for this special project, I called them and I told them what I wanted, and it was really close to Christmas, and they have grandchildren and whatever, and they said, yes, we'll do it, and they did it in a less than 24-hour turnaround, which was,
wow,
so amazing and so kind, and all praises to the Hopkins of Somerville, South Carolina. Well, I got it back, and I spent the entire weekend zigzagging the letters onto the quilt. I stayed up all night. It was like a Saturday night. I didn't go to church on Sunday. Sorry, Jesus. Quilting for the president. And I just kept stitching and stitching and stitching and stitching. I used gold thread to zigzag my letters on, and I ran out of gold thread, I think, right at the last little, like, 4 inches of my leaf. I had to go get more gold fabric, $14 a spool. I can't believe that. But I got everything on. And finally, I got the very last letter of my phrase, full of the hope that the present has brought us, on the quilt. And it was just like, wow. And it looked really good. It was scary because it was coming together as if divinely inspired. I know that sounds corny, but it's how I felt. So when I started thinking about the president and doing this project, he had two overwhelming themes, and I think depending on who we are is how we were drawn to the themes. We were either, he talked about change, and he talked about hope. And I'm a hope girl, so hope was what I was drawn to as a theme. And so on the inner small black circle of the quilt, on the outside of the circle where the hand and the leaf is, I decided that I wanted the word hope written in as many different languages as I could find, using English letters. So I obviously could not write it, you know, in Farsi because you can't translate it. I used black letter beads with white letters. And late in the game, I'm like 6-7 days out from having to send this quilt to Washington, I realized I did not have enough black letter beads with white letters. So I called this amazing company, I think in Tennessee, called gelstuff.com, and the nicest man, whose name is Tim, I don't know anything else about him, but his name is Tim, and he was having a birthday on Christmas. I don't know why we get talking, but he was telling me his birthday was on Christmas, and I was like, yay, happy birthday, Tim. And I had put out a call to my wonderful friends and family, and I asked them to ask their friends, and to tell me any languages that they knew the word hope in. And I ended up with 35 languages. I narrowed it down to 29 plus English. So some of the languages that I used were Swahili, Gaelic, Ethiopian, Xhosa, that's a clicking language from South Africa, Tibetan, Zulu, Aramaic, Navajo. It was great. It was great. And I finished the very last word, which was the Gaelic one, which is really long and hard. You'd think a word like hope would not have so many letters in another language, but it did. But I got it done. And in the middle of this process, I got this great idea that I should have a quilt blessing party because now enough people in my life knew about the project, so I decided I was going to have a party to bless the quilt before I sent it off to Washington. So I did, and I had three different blessings on my quilt. We had a lovely little party, and got the quilt to Washington on the day that it was supposed to go there. And what I wrote, my statement about the quilt, I will read it into the record. And the title of my quilt is The Hope of a New Day Begun. This quilt depicts the new leaf of hope held gently between the hands that symbolize all Americans. This quilt is constructed of cotton fabrics. It's machine quilted with cotton and metallic thread. The hands, the leaf, and all the letters on the piece were machine zigzag. Individual letter beads were sewn on to spell the word hope in 30 different languages. The quote on the outer ring of the quilt, full of the hope that the present has brought us, is from the Black National Anthem, Lift Every Voice and Sing. So that is the story of how the Obama quilt was born. And I got to go to Washington to see the opening, and that was amazing. I know that in the world now there are probably going to be three or four or five Obama quilt exhibits, but this one was the only one that took place in the Washington, D.C. area that was at a National Historical Museum. And I'm just so honored to have been there. It was an amazing day. It was an amazing event. And I really was just so honored and amazed by the whole thing.
Is this quilt typical of your style? If someone looked at this quilt, would they say, oh, yes, Cookie Washington made that?
Wow, what a good question. Yes and no. Someone said of me, and at the time I thought it was kind of an insult, but I realize now that it wasn't. Someone said, oh, you do elegant folk art. And my lines do tend to be more clean, my art inspiration is Arte, so I tend to like those clean, stylized lines. It is probably typical. And my quilt, I think I went through this whole process without really explaining that the quilt really is round. It's just a big, like a donut, a round quilt. Or disc, of course, it's flat. But, The round thing was, I have done three round quilts, and most people don't do round quilts. And I like odd and different. And, but still stylized and odd and different. So, yeah, I think I would say that this would make sense, yeah, that you would probably know or guess that, yeah, this is probably my quilt.
What are your plans for the quilt?
Pardon?
What are your plans for the quilt when it comes back?
Oh, another good question. I'm actually praying that it doesn't come back. I would love it if the Obamas wanted it or something. But I certainly it will be for sale if it. I really kind of want to keep it, but I am a full-time artist and I'm always needing to finance the next art project. So I certainly would be willing to let it go. But as of yesterday, Roland Freeman sent us all an email saying that the exhibit, which was due to end on the 30th of January, has been held over to July 30th in Washington. So I'm hoping after that it will travel, and then after that, like I said, I have no idea. I love it, and I want to go back to Washington and spend some more time with it. Because when you're, for me, when I'm working on the quilt, I don't get perspective. You know, you're just like, get it done. And even at my quilt blessing party and at the opening, you know, there were so many people there. At the opening, there were like 500 people. And so several people asked me to stand by my quilt so they could take a picture of me or whatever, which was very fun. But I still didn't get to observe my quilt is hanging in a museum, and I want to take that in. So I didn't get to do that. But, yeah, I would be willing to sell the quilt for the right price. But if the Obamas want it, they can get it for free. Just putting that out there.
Tell me about your interest in quilt making.
I have been a dressmaker since I was a little girl. When I was 4 years old, I made my very first, Barbie dress out of an old cotton sheet at my grandmother's house one summer. And my granddaddy bought my doll dress for 50 cents. And I loved that. And so I've always been a dressmaker, seamstress, fashion designer. So I came late to the quilting game. I used to work in a fabric store, and women would come in, and they'd go, well, I want a quarter of a yard of, 35 fabrics. And I'd think, I hate you. and I hadn't seen any art quilts, you know, and there's only so many Sunbonnet Sues or Baltimore Alwyn quilts or, you know, whatever that you can see. And they're pretty. They have interesting colors. They don't have interesting colors. But for me, I appreciate the technical work of them. And I especially appreciate and respect and admire so much hand quilters. They're amazing. But they didn't speak to my soul until I saw some African-American art quilts, and I thought, oh my goodness, I could do this. This is art. I could do this. This is art. This is fabric. This is, oh, yeah. So it's that, excuse me, okay, it passed. I apologize.
It's okay.
So when I saw the first art quilt, I just fell in love and thought, I can do this. And I don't want to say I write because that's an insult to writers, but I write things for myself, and I formulate these ideas. And I had ideas about things I wanted to say artistically, but I don't draw and I don't paint, really. So relating them in fabric was something that I realized I could do. And I work in a lot in the theme of black goddesses and black Madonnas, which still comes under the category of goddesses. And it's very important to me to portray African-American women, even if they are fictitious African-American women, in a positive light and show people, you know, bear witness to our history. So that's why this is important to me. I'm getting ready to be a part of an exhibit that is of black mermaids, and I'm very excited about this because the very first stories of mermaids came to America with enslaved Africans to the low country of South Carolina where I live. So I'm very excited about this exhibit and doing my black mermaid. And again, that that will come under the goddess theme, because these stories are not really of mermaids, they're of black ocean and river goddesses who have the tail of a fish, but somebody coined the term mermaid.
Is it typical for you to have words in your quilt?
Is it typical? No, sometimes I have had words on my quilt, but not typically. But this, the day after the election, I was talking to the woman I called my spirit mother, and we were trying to find words to express how we felt about the election of the first African-American president. And, you know, we kept saying, well, it's kind of like this, but then it doesn't feel, you know, that was not the right phrase or whatever. And it was very important for us to speak something out loud. And so I said to her, I've got it. And I sang the song for her. I'm sure you know it.
Mm-hmm.
Lift every voice and sing, tell earth and heaven ring, ring with the harmonies of liberty. Let our rejoicing rise high as the listening skies. Let it resound loud as the rolling sea. Sing a song full of the faith that the dark past has taught us. Sing a song full of the hope that the present has brought us. And that stayed with me. And, you know, the next part of the stanza is, facing the rising sun of our new day begun. And that's what Barack Obama is about for me.
Tell me about your blessing ceremony for your quilt.
Oh, it was so great. I have a friend who is a Native American shaman, and I attend the Unity Fellowship in Charleston, and I have a friend who is a secular celebrant, and then my friend whose house hosted my party is Jewish. And so I had those four kinds of blessings. And so it was a wonderful party. About 25 people who have been very supportive of me and my art career, and who believed in the transformative power of hope and the new administration. Does that sound corny?
No, I don't think it sounds corny at all.
But it was a great party, and everybody was excited and happy and really generous of spirit. So it was great. It was just the most amazing time.
So let's talk about the exhibit again for a minute.
Sure.
Which quilts were you drawn to and why?
There was one that is a phoenix rising from the ashes. And I loved that quilt. I just thought that was amazing. And Marlene O'Brien Seabrook's quilt with the 44 tiles on it really very powerful. I don't know if you've interviewed her yet. But that is a great quilt, because I believe very much that our president only came after all those other things that came before. Um, there's one quilt of people standing in line to vote that really touched me. There's a quilt, and I cannot remember who did it or whose quilt it is, but it's a quilt of Barack Obama in color, and in black and white, the faces of prominent African Americans behind him, and then behind that, the White House in color with red and blue, like in the sky. That quilt was first of all, is the most amazing piece of art I've ever seen, because it's a three-dimensional quilt. It's really awesome. I loved the textiles from Kenya. Thought those were beautiful. There was not a false note in the bunch. You know, it was, again, to walk into that exhibit on the 11th in a room full of really fine, high-quality, beautiful textile art that is also clearly expressing the message. You know, sometimes you'll see art and you'll go, yeah, it's pretty, but if it's trying to say something, I'm not getting it. Everybody's was clear. You know, they were just all so beautiful, and again and again and again, I just have to say, I was so honored. Yeah, I used to always think that it was like so much apparently I'm the most popular woman in Charleston today. But people would think there were so many, you know, an actor says, oh, yes, I'm just thrilled to be nominated for an Academy Award, and you're thinking, oh, no, you're not. You really want to win that Academy Award. Well, I understand that absolutely now, because I understand what it feels like to be asked to do something like this. You know, I mean, just amazing.
Do you plan to do any more quilts inspired by Barack Obama?
You know, I probably will. There's a couple things going around in my head right now, but I don't have anything sketched. And this process was so, for me, was so quick. We had to get the quilts in by December 15th, and then there was that, I had two things that I had to complete for Christmas, and then as soon as Christmas Day, I started working on my outfit to wear to the exhibit, and then there was the exhibit, and then there was the inauguration, so I haven't really had time to breathe, and then I knew I would come back to Charleston having to work on the mermaid exhibit. Because I have two pieces in it, a doll. I'm also an art doll maker and a quilter, and so I've got an art doll and an art quilt that have to be finished for the show, in very quick succession.
So how do you balance your time?
See, that question would imply that I do balance my time, and I don't. I'm a full-time artist, and sometimes I'm up until 2 or 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. Or whatever, you know, you do what you need to get it done. And I love what I do, and I want to keep doing it as long as I possibly can. I feel very passionate about it. I feel very, very passionate about it.
So describe your studio.
It's a 15 by 20 studio in North Charleston, South Carolina, in a place called the Rhodes Art Center, and it's on the old Navy base. We lost our Navy base about 15 years ago, I think. And there's a wonderful urban revitalization project going on up there, And we're in a building that will eventually be fully renovated. But right now there are about, I think there are 8 of us artists right now in this building, and it's great. It's a small studio. It's full of fabric and cutting tables and more fabric and drawings and ideas and books and my sewing machines, and I love it. I absolutely love it. And the North Charleston Cultural Arts Center could not be kinder or more supportive of us artists. And they've really given me room and a place to play, and they've been very enthusiastic about my accomplishments. So I love it up there. I absolutely love it up there. And yeah, there's enough fabric store up there to start a fabric. There's enough fabric up there to start a fabric store. So,
how do you want to be remembered?
As an artist, I'd like to be remembered as somebody who How do I want to be remembered? I want to be remembered as somebody who tried her best to make a statement with her art. My belief is give me just a second.
Sure.
I think I'd like to be remembered as a mostly self-taught quilt artist. I'd like to be remembered as somebody who, like I said, made a political statement or a historical statement with my work. And yet, you know, I find that textile design emits almost a spirit, a presence, an energy. Yeah. For me, a vitality. Yeah, that's exactly the right word, a vitality. That's unlike any other medium. And when you merge all the different elements that can go into an art quilt, you know, machine and hand sewing, painting, you know, embellishment, sound objects, you know, photo transfer is becoming very exciting. And you use these and all other non-traditional materials. Merging these things, it's more like a tapestry or a fabric collage. I like fabric collage. And I like to work in a narrative theme. I think that would be what I would want to say. Because all my quilts are narrative. I can't imagine, I mean, and no insult intended at all to other quilters, but I can't imagine just making, you know, a purple quilt for your bed. You know, I like to make statements that either are humorous or serious. And I like to draw inspiration from, like, ancient cultures, as well as modern ideas. And I like that I'm now an art quilter, because enslaved Africans use quilts to tell their stories. And I want to keep this a tradition alive for African American quilters, because although we're having a resurgence, there's still not enough of us yet. And I want to validate the African American culture by weaving stories of my African-American experience into my quilt. Just as our, I believe that my ancestors, my foremothers, did, you know, as early as 400 years ago. But even though I'm, even though I'm working in a medium that is centuries old, I like to think that I'm shifting the historical tradition to accommodate, like a totally new application, you know, the way that I, you know, bringing the round quilt or the story quilts, I think it's a new application.
So what are your favorite techniques and materials?
Oh, I love silk and I love cotton. And I like pictorial art. And I love embellishments, but what's fun about embellishment is it's like a secret. It's like wearing sexy lingerie. You really have to be right up on somebody on a quilt before you can see all of the kind of secret, lovely, surprise elements that are in it. And I very much want, you asked me how I wanted, I'm sorry, this is a long way around of talking this out, but I want to make art that challenges people to think and to feel. I want to make art that uplifts people and annoys them sometime, that challenges them to learn more about their subject, about my subject, and their own feelings about it. One of the things that I want to make a quilt about that I'm so passionate about is when I was a little girl, more than anything in the world I wanted to be an Air Force pilot. My dad was in the Air Force, and I love airplanes. I just love airplanes. And I always knew that I was like a little weird kid because I sewed and I read a lot and I wasn't very active because I was an asthmatic, so I was a little short and chunky. But I just thought, oh, I could... Good God, everybody in the world is looking for me. But anyway, so I wanted to be and I was 18 years old and trying to get into the Air Force before I realized I was, my doctor finally said, you know, you're an asthmatic, you're only 4'9", and you're obese, you're not going to make it in the Air Force. And I was like, oh my God, I'm not going to be a pilot, I'm not going to be an astronaut. My whole world was blown. But you know, it was okay. So you get up and you punt and you do something different. But I thought, well, other little girls must want to be pilots. A few years back, I was able to talk to the president of Women in Aviation. It's an international organization for women in the aviation field, obviously. And I asked her, I said, would you tell me how many black women pilots there are in the world? And she said, okay, I don't have that statistic right now, but I'll get back to you in a couple of days. And so she did. And she said, okay, I've got your information. And so I've got my pin poised, and I'm ready. And she said, there are 14 black women pilots. And I said, excuse me? She said, there are 14. And I thought what she meant was she was going to tell me alphabetically by airline. You know, there are 14 at American, and then there are 22 at Delta. And I said, is that 14 at American, or is that at Allegheny Air? She's like, no, in the world. I said, does that include FedEx, DHL, and UPS? And she said, yeah, flying commercially on the planet Earth. There are only 14 black women pilots or co-pilots. I was stunned. To say I was stunned doesn't even really cover how stunned I was. And I thought about it for days, and I was the most annoying person you've ever met for about 2 weeks because I kept calling people going, do you know this? do you know this? And I thought about it, and I thought about it, and I thought, why are there no, that's Catherine Lampkin trying to get in touch with me. She's in New York today. She said, why are there no black women? And I realized the reason why there are no black women pilots is because nobody taught us that we could fly. Willa Brown and Bessie Coleman are African-American women who early in the aviation game became pilots, but their histories are not taught in school. And it's almost as if they are hidden from us. And so I think that I really want to do a quilt depicting Willa Brown and Bessie Coleman and Dr. Mae Jemison, the very first African-American astronaut, connecting that. You know, if we don't know our history, we don't know that we can do it. It's like when Roger Bannister ran the 4-minute mile, you know, up until he did it, doctors said, oh, no, the human heart will burst. You know, the human body cannot excel to the point of ever running a mile in 4 minutes. It's just impossible. And then Roger Bannister did it, and lots of people can run a 4-minute mile now. I'm not one of those people, but I know people who can run a 4-minute mile. And I think if we don't know that it can be done, we don't know that we can do it too. And so this is my fire in the belly quilt that I've got to do. It's not just about aviation, but it's about the fact that there are still barriers to be broken down. And we need to know that we can see ourselves. You know, as late as about 7 years ago, the very first black woman brain surgeon was certified in America. You know, we still don't know what we can do because nobody has blazed those trails, or we don't know that those trails have been blazed for us. So...
Well, I think this is a great way to end our time together. We've actually been talking for more than 45 minutes.
I apologize.
Oh, don't apologize at all. You were wonderful. So I want to thank you for taking time out of your day today to talk with me.
Oh, thank you for calling. I'm honored and feel like it's such a privilege to get to be in Saving Our Stories.
Well, it was a privilege to interview. So we're going to end our interview at 10:03.